Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
Impress your friends, amaze your coworkers, make your family proud. Here's what you need to know. I'm going to tell you what
you need to know. Need another fourth quarter. The program begins right now. Right now it begins. Our Need to Know brought to you by our friends at Twin Peaks. You need to know they have 29-degree man-sized draft beer. I don't know what you're waiting on, people. Get to Twin Peaks. Great place to watch some baseball, football. Not going to be watching the Royals today. We'll get to that in a minute, but go check it out. Major League Baseball, the NFL Sunday Ticket. They got it. All the games are always on at Twin Peaks. The ESPN Plus for all the college football action as well. It is your football headquarters. Never settle. Twin Peaks, made from scratch menu. The ultimate TV setup. Great cocktails. Great happy hour for you to enjoy as well. Check it out right now. You can go to their website, TwinPeaksRestaurant.com, and check it out. Check out their new lunch menu. It's got some great combos if you want to go for some lunch. And if you're looking for their menus, some great new menu items, including a couple of new wing sauces. Their wings are out of this world. Whether you're looking for a place to watch the game, Twin Peaks is there, or just get it to go. Their made-from-scratch menu is available to go and through the delivery services as well. All right, let's start off with a little bit of Chiefs news today. We got the injuries from Andy Reid. Anthony Hitchens, abdomen, Chris Jones, wrist, and Derek Nnadi, hip, were all limited in practice today. Everybody else, a full go. They did not list Clyde Edwards-Helaire on the injury report. He was on the field, but they did say he's battling an illness, but he's on the field, so clearly not COVID. On that one, let's let you hear a little bit of what was said today. Did you hit your mic or something? Is it a mistake? You did. You fat fingered it. Okay, I just want to make sure. It's like, because the sun's blazing in and I can't really see you. So there's a reflection.
You just see yourself.
When we're doing the show now from a penalty box, yes. The plexiglass, but we don't have one here.
No.
Right? Like, we should get an extra thing there. Let's make it the penalty box. Let's hear some Patrick Mahomes getting ready to take on the Chargers. Justin Herbert is going to break his, if he would throw for 300 yards in this game, he'll break Patrick Mahomes' record. Most 300-yard games in a player's first 2 years. Of course, Mahomes only played one game in that first season, so really all of his, and he didn't have 300 yards. All 10 of his came in 1 year, his second year. Justin Herbert getting that second season to get it done. Mahomes, he's a big fan of Herbert.
Yeah, I mean, his arm talent, I mean, is crazy. I mean, the way he's able to throw some of these throws, it's kind of like when you throw it, you're like, oh, I don't know if that's a good throw, and then he's always hitting it perfectly in there, so it's always a great throw. So he's someone that has a lot of talent. He's learning more and more as he gets in this league, and whenever you can have success without having the knowledge, usually when you start getting more and more knowledge, you get even better.
Do you see any similarity between your game and his game at all?
Yeah, I mean, he's a big guy. He's a little bigger than I am, but he's a big guy. He has a strong arm, and he can move around. So, I mean, he definitely does it in his own way, but he has a lot of success doing it.
He's been pretty good. I didn't see it. I'm going to be honest with you. Now, I didn't watch every one of his games, but the highlight tapes, it always seemed like, and anytime he had a rush, he struggled. But he has not struggled with the Chargers.
6'6", 240.
He does have 2 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. He's thrown for 300 yards in each of the first 2 games, but they're just 1-1. He has 2 touchdowns, 3 INTs. Let's see if the sophomore slump happens. I like the Chiefs in this game, but then again, I like the Chiefs almost every week, and you can see what that's gotten me against the number 0-2 so far against the number. The biggest play of the game with the Chiefs and Ravens. Back with the Browns, it was the forced fumble by Juan Thornhill. That was the biggest play, getting the takeaway when it looked like the Browns were going to answer a score from the Chiefs and go right down the field. Biggest play in this one, probably Patrick Mahomes throwing the interception, right? They had a chance to put their foot on the necks of the Baltimore Ravens. Mahomes said today he knows that that's one pass he shouldn't have ever thrown.
Yeah, I mean, on the interception, I think it's just the time of the game that I did it. I mean, a lot of times I'll try to make those throws and get them. I usually can get them in there. It kind of came out of my hand weird when he kind of wrapped me up and spun me. You just can't do that at that time of the game. Just throw it to the check down, punt the ball, trust your defense to get the stop, and that's how you win football games.
Said trust your defense to get the stop. Is that to say he didn't trust the defense and that's why he was throwing it?
It could be. I think if he's in that spot again, he's probably going to try to throw the ball. That's just what he is.
He usually has such great spatial awareness and such great, you know, touch on everything with his body physically that he doesn't make those throws. He knows. Yeah, he has the touching. He knows that, oh, that's not going to come out right. And this one, he made a mistake.
Well,
life happens.
That was what was most troubling for me, is because he is a smart enough guy to know that he can't make that throw. And to hear him say that, what did I say on Monday? That when I was looking at it, I was like a disappointed dad, because I'm like, you know better than that, son. But he recognizes it and he said the right thing.
I'm not disappointed in Patrick Mahomes in any way. I take exception for you having disappointment in Patrick Mahomes.
It's not a letter.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm a better parent than you, I guess.
Like,
says the guy with no kids.
Yeah.
That's what makes it funny.
I may not be number one, but I'd like to think I'm, you know, solid.
Didn't say you were a bad parent.
It's not as good as you.
Clearly.
Right, okay.
My cats are perfect.
I don't have any problem children, I'll tell you what. Not that you do, but none of us three do.
All of you have children. You have problems. Yeah. I mean, it goes hand in hand. Speaking of which, Patrick Mahomes has a brother. He was in Baltimore. Jackson, I guess, he's a big deal on TikTok?
I think so. You may have to defer that to
Jed.
I'm not on TikTok.
You're on TikTok all the time.
I'm not, but he is a big deal on TikTok. He has a lot of followers.
How many?
I think he has like 400,000.
Is that more than me?
That is probably more than you, okay, because I don't believe you have a TikTok, so that would put you at zero.
I actually do, I think, have a TikTok. Feel free to follow it.
Why? Because almost 50.
Because I got to monitor what the hell my kids are doing.
Oh, yeah, that's fair.
There you go.
Again, with the no kid things, I don't have to really worry about that.
So I was like, oh, let me see what this is all about. But I got to be honest with you, that's about all I've done.
I don't even understand it. I think it's just dancing videos and stupid stuff.
Todd Lebo. So anyway, Jackson Mahomes ended up pouring water out of a water bottle on some heckling Baltimore Raven fans. Todd Lebo asked Mahomes today about the clip that went viral. I know Barstool Sports put it out there. Jackson pouring water on a Raven fan.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's something that we don't want to necessarily do. There was things said to him and Brittany that you don't see kind of on the clip. But I mean, he's been good at it, at not trying to respond to that stuff. He takes a lot, and he's usually pretty good at it, and he'll learn from it, and just try to stay away from those people as best he can.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how was that answer to the question?
3. Nah, 5.
Okay, Jed?
Middle of the road.
You're on the fence. How could you go anywhere but a 5?
I think it was a fine answer. I think it's always hard when you're answering for someone who isn't you. I mean, he's a family member, but I think that was a fine answer. It sounded like pretty much every other answer that Patrick Mahomes gives. We need to get better. He needs to learn from him.
I think it was an absolute 10. Because he didn't throw his brother under the bus. Right? He'd be like, well, the guy's he's a dumbass, and what do you want me to do? Right? If I'd say 9.5, I didn't know Brittany was even involved in it. So I think that was one, just as if it's PR guy, like, listen, no one's talking about her. You don't even need to mention her name. It's all on him. Maybe I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen all the buzz. Maybe there is a social media buzz. So then I would back it back up from a 9.5 to a 10. But I thought he did a great job of kind of supporting him. He's like, he takes a lot.
Yeah,
I think he does.
That's
the best
part of it.
I think he managed to support his brother while saying, yeah, we can't do that. But not like, you know, this guy's a dumbass, you know, or anything like that. He had his brother's back as much as you can have it in a political correct way, but then said, but you can't do that. I don't, how could, make a mistake somewhere? Like, thanks for the interception.
Right.
You're human.
That's true.
Because I think that's like, you know, I mean, I what would I do in that situation? Oh, you should have heard these dumbasses.
Yes,
like, I tell you what, the one idiot said this and this and this and this. And, you know, and he just.
That's a good point.
Got it all done pretty quick. I thought it was actually pretty good. I was impressed. Not impressive is the Chiefs' defensive line. It has not been good. Most expensive part of the team, at least position group on the team, and really getting beaten all over the place. Jaron Reed was supposed to come in and be the guy that could replace Chris Jones to allow Chris Jones to move outside and really be a stud out there. That has not happened. Reed was at the podium today, was asked what the defense thinks when they look at the tape of the first two games.
You know, we're pissed off. You know, it was not to our standards. And we have very high standards. And trust me, we're definitely going to get on that, get down, and just keep going, man. We got to keep our heads up. We don't get down on nothing. You know, we know who we are, and we're going to stand on that.
It's about as good as it gets.
Yeah, I mean, spoke earlier about, you know, just basic fundamentals, which you don't need. Sometimes you don't want to hear that, but.
Orlando Brown played better in the second game. The first game, he didn't have a very good day, and he came out and said the things people want to hear. You know, said the right things, handled it well, but at some point, you got to win on the field, or no matter what you say, it's going to be wrong.
Nope.
But that's what you wanted to hear, so let's hope that they can get it done. Different kind of challenge against the Chargers. I am optimistic that they will play better. I'm not going to make any kind of definitive statement about where the defense is going or massive changes that need to happen until we play two more games.
The one thing, I guess, is kind of a fear, although he's not playing particularly well, it will be a more basic offense in the Chargers, but when you got problems at linebacker, guys you can't cover, and here comes Austin Ekeler to maybe catch 8 balls out of the backfield but he hasn't really done that to this point. Only 6 catches, and he's only averaging about 7 catches, and only
because he hadn't played the Chiefs.
He hadn't played the Chiefs, but that's the guy. If the apple cart gets overturned on Sunday for the Chiefs defense, it just could be Austin Ekeler or any one of the defensive backs. If they start getting free in the secondary and guys are missing coverages, then we've seen both ends of the offensive schemes, and you're 0-for-3 in stopping them.
Other NFL news, Tua Tagovailoa is going to be out Sunday. They found some additional small fractures in his ribs, so he will not play. Jamie Collins, Lions linebacker, who was held out of practice today, has been the subject of trade discussions between the Lions and other teams. Lions have fielded calls and are exploring a trade involving Collins, so we'll see if that ends up coming to fruition. Antonio Brown's been placed on the COVID list today. He tested positive per league sources, so he's got to go through the two negative tests. Separated by 24 hours, probably unlikely that he'll be able to play in that game against the Rams. And the Bears are going to start Justin Fields. He'll make his first career start. Andy Dalton expected to be out with his left knee injury. They don't think it's as serious as they originally thought on Dalton, but he's not going to play this week. Matt Nagy telling reporters today, can I go on record as being the one guy who gets it why Andy Dalton is playing and did not see it at Ohio State as to why this guy's a canvas. I'm not saying he won't be good. Mm-hmm. I've had my nose bloodied a little bit by saying Herbert isn't going to get there, so I'm a little gun-shy. But I don't see it with him. And, you know, Andy Dalton was 8 of 11. This kid was, what, 6 of 13?
Something like that, yeah.
The passing hasn't been there. He makes some plays with his legs and made plays with his legs in the preseason, but now he's going to have to throw it. And I think you're going to see a lot of national people, particularly I think everybody who works at a network called ESPN, who has been going on and on and on, like Matt Nagy is this colossal boob. When Fields throws no touchdowns and 2 INTs, or if he plays 3 or 4 games and he has more INTs than touchdowns, I want to hear what these people have to say.
Yeah.
I want to hear what they have to say.
Does Dalton get the job back when he's healthy? Prediction?
I think so, yes. I think so, yes.
Because for it not to be, Fields would have to blow up to a degree that you don't think is going to happen.
No. The Reds have come to an agreement on a contract extension with David Bell. 2-year extension that covers him through 23. The Reds right now, right in the mix of it for a wild card, 78-74. If the wild card was today, they have the second wild card. No. The Cardinals have a second wild card. They're 4 back of the second wild card spot. So, but certainly a good year. They give him an extension. How about this one? This is Salvador Perez. You're going to hear Salvador Perez and Johnny Bench. Earlier today, the Royals tweeted out this video of Hall of Famer Johnny Bench congratulating Salvador Perez for breaking Bench's own single-season record, stood for 50 years for most home runs by a full-time catcher.
Oye, ¿qué pasó, amigo?
Hey, man, what are you doing? 46?
Bobby. A little bit. Just like you, amigo.
Oh, yeah, man.
Just like you.
Congratulations. What a change you made.
I think consistent, be honest to you, Johnny. Try to do the same thing every day. Be consistent. You know, my drill, my casework, you know. Pedro Reforcing here, my bench coach, my catching coach, he helped me a lot. Miguel Garcia, the BP truck for us. Terry Bradshaw, a hitting coach, you know. We put all that information together the last off season. Mike Tosar in Miami. And, you know, thank God to keep me healthy and do what I do right now.
It must be a time for a new contract. ¿Por qué?
¿Por qué? Yeah, you know.
Oh, man. And your catching has stayed great. And you've gotten some rest, which I'm glad to see. I know you were trying to catch all of those games. But yeah, stay fresh. Yeah, I love to watch you. I love for my kids to see you play. And the fact that you've done so well and you've kept away a great personality, you've kept a great demeanor about you, you've got a great reputation, and that's the best thing of all. So I'm so proud of you for what you've done. And then, you know, your gold gloves, man, it's just amazing what you've done, and you've worked hard for it. You deserve it.
Thank you for being inspiration. How you say, Pedro? Inspiration for me and for all the catchers, you know.
Inspiration for me and all the catchers.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, that is really cool. Two great catchers talking. You can hear the mutual admiration for each other, and it's great to hear Johnny Bench. I always like it when you got one of the all-time greats, one of the older guys, that's complimentary of the new guys, as opposed to Oscar Robertson, who's got a stick so far up his rectum and just bitches about the modern players and shooting mm-hmm. threes. And it's just great to hear him. Talk about Sal Perez and how great he's doing. So good stuff there from the Royals. Johnny Bench congratulating Salvador Perez on breaking Bench's single-season catcher record. Home runs by a catcher. Plays predominantly as a catcher, so richly deserved for Salvador Perez. A couple other nuggets for you. College Football Playoff Board of Managers, they have the authority to change the playoff. They will not vote next week on the proposed 12-team format. This is according to Bill Hancock, KC guy.
Yeah.
ESPN saying this today. Bill Hancock says, nope, vote's not going to happen. You can credit the ACC, Big Ten, and Pac-12. The Alliance, it was a terrible Zoom. They boobed it up. They also delayed this. It's basically an effort to say it's not all about the SEC, and we're going to talk about this some more. So we thought that was coming. It's now official. They're not going to vote right away. Northwestern will redevelop Ryan Field in the coming years with funds from a $480 million gift from the family of Patrick and Ryan Shirley. Some note for a couple reasons. One, I looked up. I'd never heard of Ryan, Patrick and Shirley Ryan. Patrick Ryan is valued at over $3 billion. 3.1 is the number I saw. They're giving $480 million. Now, let me be clear. He didn't write a check for $480. This usually is like $24 million a year for 20 years is how that works. Maybe this is $12 million a year for 40 years, however it's going to work. But he is giving up $480 million. It's like almost a sixth of what he's worth. Again, it's not all going to come out in one check. That's not how these things usually work. People should know that. But let the record show, Northwestern's building a new field. Right? They're in the Big Ten. Right now, it looks like the Big 12 is going to move forward, and it's going to add its four new members, although I'm not sure you'll ever see all 12 of these teams play. I will say this. If Kansas wants to get a nod from the Big Ten, this is going out to the big money guys around the Kansas program. You're going to need to do this as well. If they're telling Northwestern, get your stadium up to snuff, you're not getting in to the Big Ten with Memorial Field the way it is. Isn't that what it is, Memorial Field?
Memorial Stadium.
Memorial Stadium is not going to cut it.
No. And Ryan Field was renovated 25 years ago, but it's already in need of another step up.
I know everybody laughed at Shea and Zenger when he was trying to do this. Are you laughing now? And it may have been a last-ditch attempt to try to save his job and keep that project going. That project needs to be renewed, and you need to get going. If you're going to have any shot at getting into the Big Ten or the ACC or the Pac-12, or just for the future of your football program, that stadium has to improve. And I'm not saying you got to give $480 million. I don't know what it would cost to get that stadium up to snuff. But Baylor's model, smaller, but luxury suites, premium seats, a revenue generator, Kansas has got to get that done, and they got to get it done now. Right now. We will take a break, come back. Seth Kaiser is going to join us. We're going to talk some Chiefs football with the man who studies the video like no one else, from The Athletic, from his Chief in the North newsletter, Seth Kaiser, coming up next here in the program.
The Program with Soren Petro.
I think that's probably the weirdest voice I've ever heard in my life.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. He's a pastor who likes the passing game, an attorney who enjoys play action more than class action, and he loves to watch Chiefs game tape for hours and hours and hours.
He's Seth Kaiser of The Athletic on the program.
He breaks it all down. You can also check out his great work at the Chief in the North newsletter, breaking down the Chiefs film like no one else. He joins us each and every Wednesday here in the program. Seth Kaiser is brought to you by our friends at Applause Custom Sight and Sound. If you want the ultimate football theater, watch all the games, call Applause Custom Sight and Sound. The best in the business, almost 20 years in business in an industry where most companies don't even last 2 years. I've been working with Applause. They've been in my house since 2004. They're absolutely fantastic. Check them out online at applausetheater.com or call 913-498-1183. Seth, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing. You know, it's a beautiful day outside, and could always be worse.
Is it beautiful up there in the Northland? Because we've got like 74 and sunshine with no clouds. It could not be better.
That, you know, you take a knock a couple of degrees off it to a 72, 71, and that's what it's been like today, not a cloud in the sky.
Yeah, it is amazing. And, of course, you know, is it a cloudy day, though, still for Chiefs fans because of the loss of the Baltimore Ravens? How disappointed are you in that loss? Is this just one where you go, well, perfect storm, the Ravens kind of put it all together, or do you say, wow, there are problems here and they're going to linger on?
You know, I'm going to answer by taking a long road to a short thought, if that's okay, because
okay.
I never do that. In 2019, I believe it was October 14th, I wrote an article asking if it was time to question the direction of Chiefs coach Andy Reid and Chiefs general manager Brett Veach, and I talked about they'd had some recent losses, including even once Mahomes came back. They had a few things go wrong that season, and things were looking pretty grim. So I wrote about, you know, a number of things that they could have done better, a number of problems that they had on the team, et cetera, et cetera. And about approximately 2.5 months later, they won the Super Bowl, and I looked really, really smart, let me just tell you. And here's the overarching point. That was about, what, 6 weeks or 4 weeks, 5 weeks farther along in the season, or if not a little bit more than we are right now. And the moral of the story being everything that happens at this time of the year. Now, it matters because seeding is important, right? Getting W's in September matters because it makes you more likely to win the division, win that one seed, get that bye week, get home field advantage. Those things all matter. Style and how games go doesn't matter all that much. It's just about getting the win. So it's a disappointing thing for that reason. And there are a few things, especially, that I'm pretty worried about. But I'm worried with the caveat that we'll see. You know what I mean? So that's my long road to a short thought, that any worry you have right now shouldn't really be overwhelming. But there are some things worth being concerned about.
Seth has written a great piece, his Chief of the North newsletter, where he basically breaks down all his concerns, right, and what level of concern he has. And it's a lot of the things that we've hit upon over the last few days that fans are thinking, you know, Andy Reid letting his foot off the gas, concern level, meh, right? I'm with that. Like, that one's pretty easy. You know, he got down to where I think if I have a concern there, it's that he no longer can be, and many coaches find themselves in this, but I think he's going to find himself in this in every late-game situation that the game is close. He has to not only score, but he has to leave no time because there's no confidence in the defense right now. That is a tougher needle to thread, right?
Oh, absolutely. And that's the position they found themselves in 2018. And let's face it, 2018, they were an offside penalty from the Super Bowl that I will go to my grave believing they would have won. And so it's not as though they're not still a Super Bowl contender with a horrible defense. So let's say the defense stays as bad as it was against Baltimore for the rest of the year. They're still a Super Bowl contender and a very strong one. And how many teams can say that, honestly, right? But it does narrow the margin, right? You can't have things go wrong, like an offside, because suddenly your margin of error is too slim. You can't have a fumble at the end of a game that you otherwise very likely would have won. You know, one pick here and there, a couple of bad penalties. Suddenly a few things that you normally could overcome become a much bigger deal. And that's where the concern would lie, is this idea of having a small margin of error. I've just never, in all the years I've done this, people have pointed me to certain games and all that kind of stuff, and I always go back and watch them, and I still see deep route combinations. I still see relatively similar play calling. I don't see Andy Reid letting off his foot off the gas nearly as much as people seem to think. And I think sometimes the narrative just takes hold, and people see the Chiefs not having as much success when they're ahead, and they automatically say, well, it must be this reason. So that's the reason I don't really worry too much about it, because I'm not sure how much of a thing it really is in the terms of putting a boot to the throat in the fourth quarter. Now, I'm assuming we'll talk about it soon. Now, talking about being more aggressive, that I do feel is an issue.
Okay, let's fast forward to that, because that's your number one concern, is about Andy Reid not being more aggressive. Tell me why that's number one, and how where you see him being conservative.
Sure. So one thing to look at, there's all kinds of analytics that you can look at. One is, pass rate over expected, which basically takes into account field position, score, down and distance, and how likely a team is historically to throw or pass in a situation. And the Chiefs, in what is a pleasing thing, they're like 9% over what would be expected. But at the same time, on early downs, they're still only passing approximately, I think it's around 65% of the time, give or take. And the thing for me is, that's way too low. It's absurdly low. And you and I have talked about this for a couple of years. The Chiefs right now, they're running the ball a little bit more than they did last year. Now, we'll see if that's a theme or not. And the reality is, at least statistically, and you obviously have to account for things like matchup and alignment and all that stuff. But statistically speaking, the best way to move the ball, which, on a side note, is also the best way to control the game, if you want to talk about keeping the defense fresh and all that, the best way to do that is to get first downs, extend drives. Also, the best way to score points is to throw the ball. Put the ball in Patrick Mahomes' hands as often as humanly possible. And right now, they're not doing that. And that's something that, every year that Mahomes has been at the helm, that's something we've talked about, that they really should be throwing the ball even more. I really am of the opinion that unless there's some kind of clear personnel or schematic advantage to be had, they line up and, the opposing team has three guys at the line of scrimmage and five total in the box, fine. Check it to a run and take the 5 to 10 free yards you're getting. Or if it's second and one and it's a really easy thing, something like that, or if you're midway through the fourth quarter and you're up by 20. Outside of those situations, I think the Chiefs should be running the ball 80, 90% of the time, or passing the ball, 80 or 90% of the time, just because they're so good at it. And defenses have been shown to still respect play action. Just the mere threat of a run is enough, because linebackers have been reading those keys their entire lives. They're not going to be able to stop themselves just because they're facing the Chiefs. And the equivalent, and the analogy that I made would be if Happy Gilmore decided to start playing it safe and laying up on par fives, because that's the safe way to play it, and he's immediately losing that advantage he has over every golfer who sets foot on the tee, right? You can drive it 500 yards or however far he could drive it in the movie, I don't remember, and I don't know anything about golf. But they remove their inherent advantage any time they take the ball out of Mahomes' hands when they don't need to. And that's my biggest concern, because you are giving away, in part, one of your absolute biggest advantage.
A couple things here. Let me just flatter me and give me the one or two word answer, and then I'll tell you where I'm going with this. Do you believe in complementary football?
Yes.
Okay. Do you believe in the laws of diminishing returns? That it at least exists in some instances.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, and then finally, is there anybody that in the NFL that throws the ball 80 or 90% of the time consistently? Not for one game, but for a season, said, here we go, 80, 90% of the time we're going to throw the ball.
Right. No, I've never seen it.
Okay, so the purpose of that is, number one, 80, 90%, it's never been done, so we don't know what happens when you do throw it that often. So there's uncharted territories. Right now, we know in limited samples, when you get up towards that number, it's still positive. We know that when you're throwing the ball 50% of the time, 60, 65, 70, the returns are still good. We don't really know what happens at 80 or 90%. Now, I tend to be with you that we'll find out it's like breaking the speed of sound. You don't immediately combust. And at the four-minute mile, your lungs don't explode. Those were things that were thought to be potential truths, or some people thought were absolute truths, that once we did it, we realized, no, no big deal. It can absolutely be done. So I tend to agree with you on that, but I like to at least acknowledge that maybe there is a point where we get to the laws of diminishing returns. If I steal a pack of gum once a month, they're not going to put a bunch of security cameras on it. But if I'm taking a pack of gum every hour on the hour, eventually they're going to put a security detail on it, and I'm going to get busted. No more free gum for Fatty.
Absolutely.
So there is an element of, once you change your tactic and go that exclusive to it, do they change their defensive tactics? And then the complimentary football part, I am a believer in it. I think there's an element to it. I'm not as sold on its relevance or importance of what I think some more old school football people. Like I kind of had this chat with Jeff Chedia last night, and you know he's more a believer in the complimentary football than I am. I will say this: can we agree that the complimentary football approach, in other words, running for the Chiefs against the Browns, was effective and did it, whether it was the reason, whether it was a cause for why. They turned the tide in the second half against the Browns, and they ran the ball more. They weren't even that effective. Like, they'd get, like, 3 yards or 2 yards and 4 yards, and then have to convert a third and four, and they would do it, or a third and five, and they would do it, but they burned the clock, took more than half the third quarter off the game clock, and got a touchdown, which protected their defense, kept them off the field, and we know staying off the field means a fresher defense, which fresher is better for everybody. We would think, certainly on the defensive side of the ball, that the complementary approach worked against the Browns. And is that what's necessary to make this Chiefs defense better?
I don't think so, no. I think when we talk about keeping the defense fresh, I mean, it depends on whether you're talking about game clock time or real time. And I tend to believe when we're talking about, you know, someone getting some rest, we're talking about real time, right? You know, you need some time to take a breath. Best way to do that is to get first downs. I would note that even when they weren't running the ball as much in the first half, a couple of their drives still took a long time. And so I don't know if you necessarily need the run game. The goal of every drive is to score. And I'm not sure, I've never seen it convincingly presented to me that time of possession is anything but a correlation to winning the game and grinding down the clock at the end. And so for me, I think complementary football is real. I just think somewhere along the line, and maybe this is because at the lower levels of football, running the ball is a lot more efficient than it is in the NFL, at least comparative to the passing game, because the quarterbacks are worse and the defensive athletes are slower, right? So the running backs kind of have more of an inherent advantage. Quarterbacks aren't as good. I think that's where you get this idea that running the ball is what does complementary football. I think with a team like the Chiefs, where you have what amounts to a juggernaut on offense, your best shot at playing really good complementary football is to get first downs every single drive. I think your best chance at that is Patrick Mahomes. I do agree, though, with the idea of diminishing returns. I just want to see it. You know what I mean? Like, I want the Chiefs to toy with the boundaries of what is acceptable football to the point to where people are accusing them of ruining the game. You know what I mean? Like, I want to see some 70-point game where they play empty sets all day to where people are writing afterwards, are the Chiefs ruining the NFL? And then see force teams to adjust to that. And then say, okay, guys, we've done a few crazy things here. Now let's rein it in and run the ball occasionally, because teams are lining up on us with one defensive lineman and 10 defensive backs. You know, I want to see them push the boundaries of that limit, because if there ever was a team to do it, it's a team with Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, and Tyreek Hill, and an offensive line that overall in pass protection has held up pretty well. So that to me, that's the time to push the boundaries of what's possible.
We're talking to Seth Kizer from The Athletic, his Chief in the North newsletter. Must read if you're a big Chiefs fan. He's got a great one out right now. You'll love all these different bullet points that are out there. On that subject, not before we leave that, I'm with you. I want to see the experiment as well. Somebody do it. Let me see what happens and give us the data points so we can answer that question. And I think it would be a lot of fun. And if anyone's going to succeed doing it, I think it's Andy Reid plus Patrick Mahomes. But along the offensive line, you said they held up pretty well. I mean, like, I'm not convinced. Are you loving what you're seeing out of Orlando Brown? Joe Tooney is frankly disappointing based upon at least his PFF grades. You know, the right side of the offensive line, I think, is doing as well as you could expect with them all being rookies. They're actually all grading better than Tooney and Orlando Brown. You know, like, you really think they could hold up rocking back in a pass set all the time? Because Orlando Brown was clearly outclassed by Myles Garrett.
And see, I don't agree with that, honestly. Okay. I charted his snaps, and I think Garrett got the better of him multiple times. He had a terrible first drive. Holy crap. That was bad. But throughout the course of the game, generally speaking, I thought he gave as good as he got by and large. And I understand whoever did the grading for PFF would disagree with me. And I would love to walk through with them step by step on each snap and ask, well, what do you see here? And so that, to me, I think Garrett got the better of him quite a, you know, multiple times. I didn't chart him as having a loss to any other player besides Garrett, and that was five times in pass protection. That's a good day against Myles Garrett. And I guess I'm not seeing some of that same thing. I don't think it looks pretty, this chase technique. It's definitely different. But I haven't charted his snaps against Baltimore. I've only gone through a couple dozen or so without charting him. I think he holds up doing that. I really do. And with him and Tooney, I think it's a matter of the line right now looks better pass blocking than run blocking. And so I think if we were going to use the offensive line as a reason to go one way or another, I'd say let's do the thing they've been better at.
I agree with you if they're playing from in front, which is a reason to go big early and try to get up in and play from in front. But I felt like the reason against the Browns they took a sack was because they were going for the home run, and it takes time, right? Like, I don't know if I said this to you last week, but I've you know, commented a couple of weeks ago, or last week, I said this a number of times that, you know, the jet chip wasp play, we all love it, but it all starts with Patrick Mahomes on the sideline talking to Eric Bieniemy saying, do we have time to run wasp? And Bieniemy doesn't go, sure. He goes, do we have time to run wasp? He asked somebody upstairs, probably Mike Kafka, since he's talking, or it's Andy Reid down the sideline, asking what he thinks about it. And to me, they were doing some kind of long developing big hitter, and he tried to ease back a little further. And I get it, step up in the pocket. That's what it's all about. But I think you do, you're not always going to be able to step up. Right, guys are going to get beat. They may be better on the inside. They are going to get beat. And if maybe their offense has lost those long developing plays because, yes, if you keep the ball 3.5 seconds or less, or 3 seconds or less, whatever the magic number is, 2.5, then yeah, those all work. But the big hitters, the big over the tops, they got to come out of the playbook because it is the chase blocking technique that Orlando Brown is doing. And you know, you can't always guarantee that he's going to be able to step up in that pocket.
Oh, absolutely, and that's always going to be the risk. I just don't think that risk is significantly larger than the offensive line struggling with some of the reach block assignments that they've shown they're struggling with right now and getting stuffed for a loss. And so for me, Mahomes throwing it away is just as good as getting stuffed for a loss at the line of scrimmage or gaining 1 yard. And one thing I would note is, you know, if Mahomes comes under pressure, you've got a much more large likelihood of a good play happening with Mahomes under pressure than you do with the offensive line not making headway in the run game. Because Mahomes has shown time and again he can make something out of that, whereas right now the running game hasn't shown that it can. Now, you always have to weigh that with, well, is he getting smacked around, right, like the Saints game last year? And so that always should come into play as well with each individual game, and that's where some of the game flow stuff and matchup stuff at least has to be taken into consideration.
Seth Kaiser is with us here in the program. The run game, last week you seemed to feel like, hey, they just need some more reps and those combination blocks and the different things that they're doing will come around. They perform better, albeit against a lesser front. Do you still have that kind of confidence, or with another week and the connections not working and the run blocking not working, do you start to get a little more pessimistic about what ultimately they can be?
It is annoying, but it does still all look correctable to me, and I keep trying to remind myself that I have never seen a team attempt this type of experiment trying to have, you know, five new offensive linemen in a year. I keep trying to remind myself about that and all the things we hear about continuity. I think they can be better. I think that it's been disappointing, though, to see some struggles right out of the gate. And I think some of it, they're just going to have to continually figure out, okay, what can each of these guys do? And, you know, and what can they do that Reed wants done and what needs to maybe get scrapped occasionally? You had one play where you've got – You've got Creed Humphrey, who's an excellent athlete, but you know he's trying to conduct a reach block across two gaps on a penetrating defensive tackle. You got to eliminate calls like that. And I'm trying to figure out whether or not they're failing to match up skill set with the call or exactly what's going on there. But it's annoying. I'll frame it that way. That's my cheerfully optimistic way of saying. I'm a little more discouraged.
How much concern with Clyde Edwards-Helaire and his talents? I know that's on your list.
Yeah, and, you know, with Edwards-Helaire, I think it's one of those things where it's on my list, and at a certain point, it's tough to continually say about a player, oh, well, you know, he's going to come on, he just needs a little more time, especially at the running back position. Generally speaking, guys that are going to pop, they pop relatively early as runners. And as a pass catcher, he hasn't really gotten very involved. It concerns me only in the sense that he's clearly decent at what he does, but he doesn't look like the game changer that you would hope they would get at the end of the first round, especially if they're going to take a position that's known to not move the needle that much. The only reason that I'm semi-comforted by that is that, again, it doesn't move the needle that much. But that's a very frustrating thing to see, especially as his role in the passing game hasn't seemed to have changed at all from year one to year two. And when that's one of the reasons you tout that you grab a guy and then it just doesn't happen, that's frustrating.
Let's go back to the defensive side of the ball. How much better can it get?
Do we have to? I'd rather not. I mean, we've seen them play with mostly the same group, a lot better defense than what we've seen. We watched them tighten up against the Browns in the second half last, you know, in week one. And situationally, and these are the things I tell myself, right, when you try to look at reasons for optimism. Situationally, they did make an important stop against Baltimore that got the offense the ball back, up 11. That was the opportunity to put it away, right? And now, the offense shouldn't have to score every time it gets the ball. So I'm in no way blaming the offense or saying the defense did nearly enough. It didn't. But you can see sometimes situationally where things looked a little bit better. So I think there's room. We've seen it. They've looked uncharacteristically poor in things that they've succeeded in throughout Spagnuolo's time, right? Communication on the back end. But generally speaking, tackling well. You know, we've had little bouts of bad tackling, but nothing like what we've seen lately. And those are things that, you know, Spagnuolo's defenses, they felt like they've overachieved a little bit, especially, you know, at the cornerback position you and I talked about that a few weeks ago. And it feels as though some of those things, that cohesiveness, everyone being on the same page, and tackling well, those are the things that just aren't going well. So I think there's an average defense in there somewhere. I don't know whether it was just terrible matchups, what's going on, but they certainly don't look it right now. And it'll be interesting to see how they look against the Chargers because everyone's kind of like, well, the two best rushing teams in the NFL. Maybe they'll get better here. But, you know, maybe now this is the week Herbert, you know, throws for 450 yards on them. And so it's going to be a good test for the passing defense as well, just to really see what they've got. So, I mean, I'm worried, but it's things they're struggling with that they haven't under Steve Spagnuolo, so that's just weird.
We've only got about a minute left. Let's get to our final four. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you have an urgent orthopedic or sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System has extended weekday hours and a Saturday morning walk-in clinic. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. Like I said, only about a minute here, Seth, so we'll go quick. First of all, give me your prediction on the Chiefs and Chargers. Who wins? What's the score?
I think the Chiefs win 31-27.
All right. Does Clyde Edwards-Helaire get a second contract with the Chiefs?
No.
Where does Chris Jones start and play? What position does he play in 22?
I'm thinking three tech.
Okay, back to D-tackle for the uninitiated. And finally, what's your favorite fruit?
My favorite fruit? I like a really, oh no, I'm going to forget what it's called. Cantaloupe. I like really good cantaloupe.
Cantaloupe? That's awful. My God, no wonder you're a lawyer. Cantaloupe?
Is there a really good cantaloupe?
Wow.
They're delicious if they're ripe enough. I'm thinking of the right thing, right? The orange fruit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's oranges, Seth.
Yeah, like oranges.
It's called a peach, I believe.
Like a mandarin.
I don't mean literal oranges. I mean cantaloupe's really good. I don't know. I have the palate of a 2-year-old.
Yeah, no, you have the palate of an 82-year-old if cantaloupe is the answer. No 2-year-old's eating cantaloupe. Well, my God, you have a cantaloupe spoon? Are you hollowing out little circles? For crying out loud, Seth. I was going to say this was our best session ever, but then you went and tanked it right there at the end with cantaloupe. Man.
Well, they'll put that on my tombstone one day. He tanked it right at the end of everything.
Seth, you're the man. Thanks so much, buddy. Great stuff. We'll talk again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
All right, you bet. Seth Kaiser from The Athletic and his chief in the North newsletter. Must listen to radio. Mandarin orange is the correct answer.
Mandarin Anything oranges. Except for cantaloupe.
No melons. No. Negative on the melons. We will take a break, come back, wrap things up with the kicker. Got a couple of things coming up next here in the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
We call it a water cooler show.
Because the next day in the offices, people gather around the water coolers to talk about it.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
But first, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. Over the last 9 seasons, how many times have the New York Giants started the season 0-2? 8. Only once since 2013 have the Giants not started 0-2. That's freaking incredible.
That's awful is what that is. You know what's fantastic, though?
Mm.
Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.
Yes.
Get it tonight. What are you waiting on? You deserve it. Joe'sKC.com. Don't forget your tailgating Friday night, Saturday, and pick it up Saturday night for your Sunday tailgate. Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. Buy the meat by the pound and put the best spread on for your tailgate. Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. Go to Joe'sKC.com. A couple things we want to leave you with here for the kicker. First of all, we will start with some news from KCNWSL. They're going to play their 22 home matches at Children's Mercy Park. Let me tell you, I am shocked at a level of nothingness. Like, it doesn't work playing soccer at the baseball stadium. I appreciate what they tried to do, and I appreciate the folks over there with the Monarchs, you know, being willing to do it. But that doesn't work.
Nope.
And so I'm glad that they're going to make it work. And then they're building their own complex, as we talked about last week. Their own complex in Riverside. They'll have their own stadium, a couple of practice pitches. Want to see that team go and succeed. I hear the ownership is great. And so I'm excited about that, about the future of the team and where they're going to go. I think that's important. And today is National Ice Cream Cone Day.
Mm.
What do you like on your cone, ice cream cone? What are you going with?
I will generally go...
you don't even
chocolate.
Know.
Chocolate or vanilla.
What do you got?
Either one.
What are you going? Ice cream cone. What are you
going
with?
I don't go
fancy. Superman.
I don't even know what the hell that is.
It's a lot of different flavors.
A vanilla soft serve with the hard shell chocolate syrup on it.
That works.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So good. So good. Enjoy it. Have an ice cream cone today, folks.